Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into To Have or To Be by Eric Fromm, a thought-provoking exploration of the choices that shape our lives and our societies. Published in 1976, this book investigates the deep-rooted consumerist motivations that prompt us to pursue having over being, offering a compelling argument for a radical shift in perspective. Fromm suggests that true fulfillment doesn't come from power, status, or material possessions, but rather from cultivating an existence centered around being, a state that fosters genuine connections, creativity, and purposeful living. Eric Fromm, a world-renowned psychologist, sociologist, and philosopher, was born in 1900 in Frankfurt am Main, Germany, into an Orthodox Jewish family. His life took a significant turn in 1934, when the Nazis rose to power, prompting him to relocate to New York. There he became a US citizen and an influential figure in academia, teaching at prestigious universities such as Columbia and Yale. Through his writings and teachings, Fromm has left an indelible mark on our understanding of human behavior, freedom, and the social structures that define our lives. To Have or To Be is an essential read for those feeling trapped in the endless rat race, weary workers searching for meaning beyond the superficial allure of materialism, power and status, and mindful individuals aspiring to live a life of purposeful productivity. This book serves as a timely reminder of the value of focusing on being rather than having, inviting readers to reconsider what truly makes life worthwhile. Join us as we explore Fromm's transformative vision in To Have or To Be and challenge ourselves to embrace a new way of living. To Have or To Be, a classic about the psyche and socioeconomic change. Introduction: Exploring a Life Beyond Possessions. Dive into authentic being. Do you often find yourself measuring your worth by the weight of your wallet, the laurels on your professional mantle, or the brand of clothes draped over your frame? Has society convinced you that your identity is nothing but a shopping list of achievements and acquisitions? There's a relentless whisper in our ears, suggesting that significance, purpose, and joy are commodities that can be bought or strived for, that to be fulfilled, one must have. But imagine for a moment a different path, one less trodden, yet promising a more profound sense of fulfillment. This is the journey from having to being, a transformation of mindset championed by Eric Fromm. It's about stepping away from the relentless pursuit of acquisitions and accolades to embrace a way of life where these no longer dictate our value. This paradigm shift frees us from the competition for validation and happiness, enabling us to pursue what truly matters for our holistic fulfillment and to envisage a society that mirrors these values. In uncovering the virtues of being over having, you will delve into the pitfalls of a having mindset and its failing equation with happiness. The realization that happiness and economic growth are not synonymous, and never will be. The potential for a being mindset to not just enrich lives but also contribute to saving our planet. Prepare to challenge your perceptions, to redefine what truly matters, and to discover the freedom that comes with authentic being. Part 1: The Illusion of Economic Progress, Chasing Happiness in a Material World. In a world where every billboard, advertisement, and social media post seems to whisper, "This will make your life better," it's no wonder many of us feel trapped in a cycle of wanting, obtaining, and still feeling unfulfilled. Society's conveyor belt moves us through one acquisition to the next: a sleeker car for success, the latest smartphone for efficiency. And yet, amidst this abundance, a haunting sense of emptiness prevails. Why is it that with each new acquisition, instead of moving closer to satisfaction, we only seem to spiral deeper into dissatisfaction, loneliness, and disillusionment? The truth we're often reluctant to confront is that there's a glaring mismatch between the promise of economic progress and the reality of personal and societal happiness. The Western chase for happiness, defined through endless consumption, has paradoxically led to a surge in anxiety, depression, and addiction. Our society's relentless drive for comparison and competition doesn't just leave individuals isolated. It weaves into the very fabric of our communities, instilling a sense that we must incessantly strive for more. However, the toll of this insatiable hunger for more transcends personal discontent. It reshapes the societal landscape itself. The capitalism that underpins Western society, with its credo of individual gain over collective well-being, has fostered a culture where sharing, solidarity, and contentment are sidelined. Such an environment not only deepens the chasm between economic classes, but also sows the seeds of conflict, as history has repeatedly shown with wars often rooted in greed. At its core, society's perpetual push towards accumulation leads to an unsettling irony. The more we have, the less fulfilled we become. The ripple effects are evident. Employers manipulate customers, bulldoze competition, and exploit workers in the name of profit. This begs the question, is there an alternative? While swapping capitalism for communism might seem like a solution, it too fails to address the underlying issue, our collective obsession with consumption. Therefore, it's imperative to initiate far-reaching social and economic reforms if we're to realign our society in a way that serves the broader good, not just the interests of a few. Without such changes, the cycle of yearning and disillusionment is doomed to persist. In our constant quest for happiness through material means, it's crucial to pause and reflect. How does this endless pursuit impact our relationship with ourselves and those around us? Is there a more fulfilling path waiting to be discovered? Let's delve deeper into these questions and explore the possibilities. Part 2: The battle between having and being, shaping our experiences and identity. Take a moment to think about the things you own, your favorite watch, those stylish sunglasses. Okay, now consider your job, your relationships. It's strange to list these alongside possessions, isn't it? Yet it's not uncommon for us to subconsciously equate them. This is a reflection of how we, as a society, have been conditioned to perceive value and completeness through the lens of ownership. But what if shifting from the having mode to the being mode could profoundly transform our sense of self and our interactions with the world? In the having mode, life becomes a pursuit of accumulation, with everything and everyone around us potentially seen as objects to be owned. This mindset infiltrates our language and perceptions, where, for instance, we often hear about having a partner rather than being with them. It stretches into how we express love, sometimes translating into demands placed on loved ones to act or accomplish in ways that satisfy our needs, rather than fostering genuine connections. The issue of objectification extends to our beliefs and opinions, where in the having mode, we hold on to our perspectives as if they were physical possessions, fearing that changing our minds equates to losing part of our identity. This rigid attachment hinders our openness to new ideas and experiences. Conversely, being mode invites us into a state of authentic existence. It's where relationships are valued for the depth of connection rather than the social or material advantage they provide. This mode frees us to genuinely interact with others, including those with differing beliefs, facilitating a more expansive, fulfilling life experience. In this mode, abundance comes not from what we accumulate, but from how we engage with and contribute to the world. Such a distinction between having and being is not new. Throughout history, thinkers from diverse cultures and disciplines have echoed the superiority of being. The Buddha spoke of transcending suffering through the cessation of craving. Jesus questioned the value of gaining material wealth at the cost of one's soul. Marx critiqued the focus on accumulating luxury as akin to the dangers of poverty, advocating instead for the value of being. While the concept of being mode may appear more appealing, the reality is that the having mode dominates societal structures, influencing our values and behaviors at every turn. Understanding this dominance and its consequences is key to exploring how we might shift towards a more fulfilling existence centered on being, As we venture deeper, let's examine the implications of this pervasive having mindset and imagine the possibilities that lie in embracing being. Part 3, selfishness flourishes in the realm of having. Could possessing everything on our wish list truly content us? It's a tantalizing idea, but living in a world where this pursuit becomes universal reveals a stark reality, an environment where those with power prioritize self-interest, and the broader populace remains indifferent to societal issues unless directly impacted. This self-serving mindset isn't confined to the corridors of power. It permeates our collective societal fabric, underlining a profound disconnect from communal responsibility. At the helm, where decisions wield the power to shape lives, the glorification of selfishness manifests through leaders whose actions speak volumes of their allegiance to self-gain. Business moguls and political figures driven by personal gain craft policies and legislation that serve their ends, conspicuously ignoring the broader good. Whether it's corporate chiefs safeguarding their bonuses amidst workforce reductions or politicians currying favor with affluent backers at the public's expense, such actions have unfortunately become expected, numbing us to their inherent selfishness. This normalization begs the question: if our societal construct breeds and rewards such self-centeredness, can we truly expect anything different from those in positions of influence? This brings us to the crux of societal engagement, or the apparent lack thereof. Engulfed in the having mode, the general populace relinquishes societal improvement endeavors to a mere thought, seldom translating into action. Overshadowed by personal gain pursuits, the wider community's welfare fades into oblivion, leaving societal progress and ethical governance in a lurch. This inaction perpetuates a cycle of passive complicity, where the societal divide only widens, a chasm between the affluent and those disenfranchised, categorized starkly as exploiters and the exploited. Amid this divide, the latter sees revolution as the sole path to reformation. Such a societal upheaval turns the page towards a new chapter, one centered on being rather than having, paving the way for transformative societal overhaul. Imagine a realm where foreign relations are healed and resource-driven conflicts become relics of the past. In this envisioned world, peace isn't just plausible, it's within reach, a testament to the potential of transitioning from a self-centric to a community-focused ethos. However, the ripple effects of the having mode extend beyond interhuman dynamics to how we interface with our environment. As we delve deeper, let's explore the impact of this pervasive mindset on our relationship with nature, unveiling another facet of the complex tapestry of selfishness fostered in the realm of having. Part 4, Earth at the Crossroads, Humanity's Struggle Against Nature. In the epochs preceding the Industrial Revolution, our predecessors lived in harmony with nature, acutely aware of the symbiotic relationship that tied their fates to the Earth's well-being. This reverence for the natural world ensured a balance, a mutual flourishing that recognized the inherent value of every element in the ecosystem. Yet, as greed became the engine of progress, this equilibrium has been jeopardized, pushing both the planet and its inhabitants toward a precipice of survival. The transformation from coexistence to dominance marked a paradigm shift in our interaction with the environment. No longer partners in the dance of life, we positioned ourselves as conquerors, seeking to bend nature to our will, extracting its riches with little thought for the consequences. The exploitation of water, air, and forests, this relentless raid on natural resources, underscores a stark detachment from the reality that nature's bounty is not infinite. Ironically, nature's response to this onslaught reveals its indomitable spirit, thrumming a warning of the limits of human intervention. Despite these clear signals, humanity's hubris persists. Empowered by technological advancements, from destructive mechanical and nuclear capabilities to the digital omniscience granted by computers, we've fashioned a new reality. In this world, humans have ascended to godhood, relegating nature to a mere component in the grand scheme of progress. But this delusion of supremacy and control brings us to an unprecedented crisis point. The survival of human civilization now hinges on a fundamental re-evaluation of our relationship with the natural world. The industrial mindset, which views the environment with disdain, initiates a cycle of ecological degradation and climate change, threatening not just human life but every form of existence on the planet. The specter of global famine, the obliteration of humanity, and the potential end of life as we know it looms large, propelled by our current trajectory. To counteract this grim future, an entirely new ethical framework is imperative, one that embraces a radical transformation in our interaction with the environment. This shift necessitates not just an ideological reform, but a profound reconception of humanity's place within the natural order. As we contemplate the future, it becomes imperative to envision a world where respect, rather than conquest, defines our engagement with the Earth. This is the foundational step toward averting the impending catastrophe and charting a course toward sustainable coexistence. Next, we will delve into the contours of this necessary transformation, exploring the potential pathways to a harmonious relationship with nature. Part 5: From Discontent to Fulfillment, A Journey of Transformation. Over 2 millennia ago, in an audacious quest for meaning, Siddhartha Gautama renounced the trappings of royalty for the path of enlightenment, eventually emerging as the Buddha. His odyssey from privilege to spiritual awakening illuminates a truth relevant to our contemporary quest for satisfaction. Merely amassing possessions and achievements fails to quell the undercurrents of suffering in our lives. While few of us might take the drastic step of foregoing all worldly ties, the essence of Buddha's journey underscores a critical insight: true contentment demands a profound shift in perspective. Understanding the root of our dissatisfaction is paramount. The crux of the issue lies in the pervasive having mode of existence, which, far from being the solution, is actually a catalyst for suffering. Here's why. Firstly, grounding our self-worth in possessions or achievements creates a shaky foundation. Everything external is transient, loss is inevitable, and with it comes a torrent of insecurities. Our peace and happiness become hostages to the fear of losing what we have, casting a shadow over our very sense of being. Secondly, the relentless pursuit of dominance in wealth, power, or social approval isolates us in a cycle of comparison and competition. It's a game set up for perpetual dissatisfaction, as there will always be someone who seems to have more or be more, diminishing our joys and accomplishments to shadows of what they could be. Lastly, the endless chase for pleasure ensnares us in a cycle where each high is chased by a low. Happiness becomes contingent on the next delight, leaving us in a constant state of wanting, never fully satisfied. But there is a path out of this cycle of discontent, which lies in embracing the being mode of existence. Here's how it transforms our experience. First, by fostering a mindset of being, we cultivate an unshakable sense of self-worth and confidence rooted in our inner qualities, traits that no external change can diminish. Next, this perspective liberates us from the need to possess, opening up the exquisite joy of sharing mutually enriching experiences with others, untainted by competition or envy. Furthermore, living in a state of being allows us to find fulfillment not in what we accrue, but in expressing our innate capabilities. To love freely, to engage with the world through reason, to create, and to share the essence of who we are. This transformation from having to being is not merely individual. It necessitates a cultural renaissance. Our society plays a pivotal role in guiding our motivations. And if we aspire to collectively embrace a life of fulfillment over accumulation, it's imperative that we foster a societal ethos that prizes the intangible richness of being over the fleeting satisfaction of having. Part 6: Reimagining Society, Cultivating a New Existential Grounding. The environments we inhabit mold us in profound ways, often more than we're willing to acknowledge. In the shadow of a consumerist culture, where acquisition and status define our worth, many find themselves ensnared in a cycle of dissatisfaction and longing. To break free, a radical restructuring of our societal foundations is imperative, a seismic shift proposed by the author, rooted in reevaluating our priorities and redefining our collective aspirations. The journey toward a transformed society begins with a collective reimagining of our raison d'être. Instead of bowing to the imperatives of a system that glorifies materialism, we must pivot towards a philosophy that asks, what benefits humanity? This query challenges us to envision a society where being supersedes having, where the essence of our actions and interactions reflects a deeper, more altruistic purpose. A key part of this societal reframing involves redefining productivity. Gone are the days when outward busyness and endless accumulation signal success. In this new paradigm, productivity is synonymous with acts of meaningful expression, endeavors that embody our true selves and contribute to a collective well-being. It's a world where the why behind our actions holds primacy over the what, fundamentally altering how we engage with work, creativity, and each other. This transformative mindset promises to reshape our relationships across three pivotal domains: people, possessions, and time. In this emergent society, seeing each other not as objects to be used but as fellow beings fosters authenticity, mutual respect, and creative expression. Such a shift promises a communal life where honesty and self-expression are not just accepted, but valued and celebrated. Regarding possessions, while ownership in itself isn't demonized, the compulsive consumerism driving us to incessantly acquire is replaced with a more conscientious mindset. Here, we pursue responsible having, seeking to own what genuinely enriches our lives and supports our existence, rather than amassing goods in a vain attempt to fill an inner void. Finally, our relationship with time undergoes a profound revision. Instead of attempting to dominate time through acts of saving or killing it, we learn to engage with it responsibly, striking a balance that respects the natural flow of life, eschewing the extremes of hyperactivity and indolence. While the path to such a society may seem daunting, the rewards, a collective existence marked by fulfillment and mutual respect, beckon irresistibly. Yet, transforming this vision into reality faces certain obstacles. As we venture further, we'll explore these challenges and ponder the steps necessary to transcend them, paving the way for a society where the ethos of being enriches every facet of our lives. Part 7: Embracing Change, Humanity's Reluctance versus the Quest for Fulfillment. In the grip of the Spanish Civil War, Arthur Koestler found himself trapped between the comfort of the familiar and the terrifying unknown, a scenario vividly illustrating the dire consequences of inaction. Just like Koestler hesitated to leave his warm villa despite the imminent threat resulting in his capture, we, as a society, often find ourselves at a similar crossroads, unwilling to step into the uncomfortable void of change for fear of losing our present comforts, even if it means jeopardizing our future. The dilemma we now face is not one of physical war, but of ideological and systemic transformation. Encountering the unknown, especially when it challenges long-standing societal norms, invokes a deep-seated fear, fear of risking what we have, fear of failure. Yet, the stark reality remains. Continuance in our current trajectory is unsustainable. Our democracy has become one of spectators rather than participants. If we are to salvage a future worth inhabiting, this paradigm must evolve into a participatory democracy. Here, the active engagement of each individual in the public sphere surpasses mere civic duty. It becomes a pillar of societal renewal. Envision the formation of committees tasked with scrutinizing products and policies, not for profit, but for the collective good. Such transparent communal scrutiny could serve as the bedrock for government actions, propelling a shift towards educating and empowering citizens to collectively identify and eschew detrimental practices and commodities. Yet, this vision demands more than casual reform. It requires an utter overhaul of current systems, systems that, as they stand, sacrifice human well-being on the altar of economic prosperity. To move forward, our definition of growth must be recalibrated. The aim should not be unchecked expansion but nuanced, discerning progress that carefully weighs the implications of our actions to prevent economic tumult while fostering societal well-being. The transition, undoubtedly, will be fraught with challenges, both logistical and philosophical. Nonetheless, the alternative, continued inertia, poses a far greater threat, the erosion of humanity itself. It's a stark proclamation, yet within it lies a kernel of hope. Societies are constructs, manifestations of collective belief and behavior. If enough of us pivot from prioritizing possessions to valuing presence, from having to being, we carve out a pathway to a more fulfilling existence for all. This shift might seem daunting, an overhaul too vast to contemplate, but remember, the essence of culture is adaptability, and within each of us lies the power to influence and redefine the norms that shape our communal life. Choosing to embrace change, to prioritize collective well-being over individual gain, we not only safeguard our future, but also rediscover the essence of what it means to live fully. Final summary. At the heart of a meaningful existence lies the choice between two distinct paths, having or being. The pursuit of happiness, a life rich in significance, purpose, and joy, beckons us to make a decisive turn away from the relentless accumulation of possessions and the quest for power. Instead, it invites us into the realm of being, a state where authentic fulfillment thrives, inspired not by self-centric gains, but by a deep connection to ourselves and the world around us. It's a call to let go of our apprehensions, to step beyond the comfort zones of the familiar, and to welcome the profound possibilities that await in the life we've always imagined. Engaging with our true selves and the societal collective in constructive, meaningful ways illuminates the path to genuine contentment. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.